If you're working on your lesson book, your homework that Pastor Rory has prepared for you, I believe you did lesson 17 for this week, a study on Acts chapter 17 and the first half of chapter 18. I would encourage you, I think there's still some books back there, to make this series part of a package deal where you not only attend adult Sunday school, where we went through the cities of Thessalonica and Berea and Athens today, chapter 17. And so that was studied in Sunday school. And then this morning, we're going to look at chapter 18, the first 17 verses, and look at Paul in the book of in the city of Corinth. And in addition to being in Sunday school and church, if you are working on this at home, you have more insight and are more prepared. So lesson 18 for the coming week. And the coming week Sunday school, as I was working on that for the teachers over the last day or so, it's exciting material. There's a lot of things that are happening. Paul's wrapping up his second missionary journey. He takes another trip down to Jerusalem that's just barely mentioned. He takes off on his third missionary journey. And in between there, there's a couple anecdotes about some Old Testament saints, both Apollos and 12 disciples of John. And there's another incident, the third incident of speaking of tongues in the book of Acts. And so Sunday school next week is going to have a variety of topics to talk about. Would encourage you to take part in that. We have four adult classes. One that usually meets in here called the Lighthouse class that Jeremy Schaefer teaches. Down the ramp and to the left is a Berean class because they're more noble. They study the Word of God more. Apparently, that's because that's what the title is. That's the Bereans, right? We just read about that. Timothy class meets over at the Parsonage, and there's a college-age class that also meets called Crossover that also meets over in the Parsonage. And so I would encourage you to study with us both at home and here in church. You know, I remember going through the book of Daniel here several years ago, and it was all prophecy. And I had a fairly new believer come to me in the middle of that series and say, Pastor Leeds, I just got to tell you, this is the most boring preaching you've ever done. This is just incredibly boring. And I said, why? And he said, because it's the same thing. There's this goat, and it means this, and there's this bear, and it means this, and Jesus is coming back again. And then the next week you do the same thing. You know, what's with that? And I said, I'm sorry, it's the book of Daniel. It's and you get into the second half of Daniel, that's what it's about. And so he did not enjoy that series at all. Well, guess what? If you are not a history person, you're probably not loving our present series, especially the section we're in right now, because there's just a lot of story. It's Paul did this, and then Paul did this, and it's sometimes a little harder to get quite as excited about some of that theology. But history is important in that it tells us who we are, tells us where we've come from. We are to learn lessons from the lives of other people. And I think especially as you look at the New Testament, there's only one book of history that tells us the history of the church, the history of the acts of the Holy Spirit and the lives of the early church. And so if we're going to know anything about what the early church was like, And what really our church should be like today, there's a lot of material in the book of Acts. So I hope you're enjoying and applying as we've done these things. I'd like to review, okay? History teachers like to review, so I want to review this morning. So let's look at a map. Paul, the church starts in Jerusalem and moves up to a place called Antioch, which is up there where the red will begin. And Kirk Carter gave me for Christmas a little pointer so I'd have a light. And I just remembered it this morning, Kurt, sitting here in the auditorium, that you gave me a pointer. It's in my desk. So thank you very much for giving me that for Christmas. It's going to do us a lot of good today. As you go up the east side of the Mediterranean, you start at Jerusalem in your bottom right, and work your way up to where there's a point coming there. That's where Antioch in Syria is. It's called Syria today. It was called Syria as a Roman province back in that day. And that's where Barnabas had come over to Cyprus, the island there, gotten Paul, brought him back to Antioch, and that happened at the end of chapter 12. And then we have what we call the three missionary journeys of Paul. We're in the middle of, or toward the end of the second one today. First missionary journey, they leave Antioch in Syria, and they come over to the island of Cyprus, and they preach the gospel. This is where Barnabas had been from, the island of Cyprus. And they start on the east side and come over to the west side, to Paphos, and then they get on another ship, and they head up to what the underbelly of what we call Turkey today. Oh, wow, my daughter's got a little light over there. All right, so we have a light. Anyway, they get off at Italia, and they go on up to another Antioch. And so sometimes as you read the Bible, you go, well, Antioch, Antioch, what's this? Well, one Antioch is in the Roman province of Syria. The other is in the Roman province of Pisidia, just like there's a Rochester, New York, and a Rochester, Minnesota. And so one bigger city is in New York, and the Mayo Clinic is in Minnesota. Anyway, he left Antioch, goes about 100 miles. He gets thrown out of town there, comes to a city named Iconium. Another 100 miles later, he goes to a city named Lystra. There's where he gets stoned, goes down to Derbe. And then instead of going back across the mountains to Antioch, by the way, he was kind of in his home country, because Paul of Tarsus, and see where the city of Tarsus is over there, a little bit to the right. There, she found it. Good, good. Instead of going that way, Paul goes back and reverses. He's been thrown out of these towns, stoned out of one. He's been thrown out of these towns just as he's gotten the church started. So he goes to the next one, gets another church started, and goes to the next one, gets another church started. And now he goes back confirming the saints. And so he works his way back to Antioch, all the way down to Perga. There he jumps on a boat and comes back to Antioch. While he's in Antioch, we have the incident happen of chapter 15. Remember what happened there? The first church council. There were some Pharisees that had come down from Jerusalem. Looks like up to us, because we think of up as being north. But they came down from Jerusalem because of the topography. That's the way our Bible reads. And told the people in Antioch that they had to be circumcised in order to be a Christian. If you're not circumcised, you're not a believer in Jesus Christ. Well, Paul and Barnabas refuted that, and finally the church. The microphone that's supposed to be up here in my collar. So, there. It's a different microphone than I usually have. Anyway, there. I don't know if that'll be good or not. Anyway, you were hearing me just fine anyway, right? Nod your head. Good. All right. So Paul and Barnabas are sent by the church from Antioch down to the church in Jerusalem to settle this issue. They came down to Jerusalem. We have the first church council, and they unanimously decide that, yes, we don't need to trouble the Gentiles with keeping the Mosaic law. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Christian. You should try not to be offensive in your culture. You should try not to be offensive to the other Jews in the church, but you should just serve the Lord and you don't have to be circumcised, you don't have to be a Jew to be a Christian. So they take that good news back to Antioch, they rejoice there, but some of the Pharisees who had believed had gone on from Antioch to those churches up there in Lystra and Iconium and Antioch where Paul and Barnabas already been. Hence the book of Galatians in our Bible, Paul writes that book, and Paul and Barnabas one day say, you know, we should really go back and preach to those churches again, and Paul said, that's a great idea. But Barnabas said, that's a great idea, Paul. Let me get Mark and go. And last Sunday morning, we talked about the fact that there was great dissension between Paul and Barnabas to the point where Paul goes one way with Silas and Barnabas grabs John Mark and goes the other way. Barnabas grabs John Mark, gets on a boat and heads over again to the island of Cyprus. This time Paul goes through his home country. He and Silas take off and they work through the areas of Galatia and Pisidia. And they get up in that area, and they pick up Timothy. And now they're on the second journey. Go to the next slide. So Paul has started here at Antioch again. It starts over there on the upper right-hand side of the Mediterranean Sea. He's worked his way through Derbe, Lystra, Iconium. And he comes up to Antioch, and he says, you know what? I want to go to Ephesus. He says he wanted to go to Asia. Now, you and me, when we think Asia, we think China. So I always thought as a kid that Paul wanted to take a right turn there and head across the Mongol country and get to China. That's what I thought when I read the Bible as a kid. But you see, the Roman province of Asia was sometimes called Asia Minor, is the little ring of seven churches over on the west side of the country of what is modern-day Turkey, the queen of them being the city of Ephesus. And if you read the book of Revelation, chapters 2 and 3, you'll see those seven churches listed in a clockwise fashion because the gospel does get to them. But so Paul's in Antioch. He wants to go west to Asia, which is weird to us, to the city of Ephesus. The Holy Spirit says, no, you can't do that. So he goes on up following that little red line there. He gets over to the coast. And finally, when he's in Troas, a seaport town that keeps showing up in our gospel, or in the book of Acts, he gets a vision. Come over to Macedonia and help us. He sees this guy in Macedonian garb. And so Paul goes across the Aegean Sea and comes to the principal city in that area of Antioch, of Macedonia, by the name of Philippi. By the way, all of a sudden it goes first person plural. We know that Luke is with him, and we know that Luke is probably from Philippi. So whether he was already a Christian or not, we don't know. Maybe Luke was traveling and got saved in Troas by Paul and now goes back with Paul to his home country in Philippi. Maybe Dr. Luke is the Macedonian in the vision. I don't know how that works. I always thought it was funny, though, as a kid, and again, read the book of Acts, and the Macedonian says, come over and help us. And then what happens to Paul when he gets to Philippi, you know, Macedonia? What happens when he gets there? Is it great? Are they saying, hey, come on in, we love you, have lunch? No. As a matter of fact, they end up putting him in jail, and there you have the jailhouse conversion of the Philippian jailer, and Paul and Silas singing after being beaten, and they're in stocks. In the middle of the night, they're singing, and God miraculously lets them out, and the Philippian jailer is saved. Well, we talked about that in Sunday school last week. Today in Sunday school, we saw he goes on to the city of Thessalonica, gets run out of town by the Jews. He goes down to Berea, gets run out of town by the Jews. And so Paul leaves behind Timothy and Silas. Doesn't say anything about Luke. I think Luke probably stayed back in Philippi, his hometown. Luke will catch up with Paul later. Timothy and Silas stay in Berea to help those Christians in the area of Thessalonica and Berea. And Paul takes the opportunity to go down to Athens. He gets down to Athens, and he immediately engages the people and begins to discuss, as he always does. Doesn't say anything about a synagogue here. Probably weren't as many Jews. Paul's engaging the people, and some of them finally bring him to this place where they did all these debates. There's this plaza where there's all kinds of statues. And they bring Paul there, all these smart people. It's a university town. Athens, though, declined politically. 400 B.C., Tony said in Sunday school this morning, Athens hits its peak, 400-500 B.C. It is still a cultural center, though Rome is the political center of the world at this time. Athens is still real big in culture. The smart people are Greeks. The intelligent people are Athenians, and so the university setting there in this very fancy era, Paul is now engaging with the doctors about the philosophy, and Paul preaches a great sermon to them at the end of Acts chapter 17, convincing them that there is a God. Talk about apologetics. If you want to know what we should talk about at the campus of UW-Madison today, if you want to know what we should talk to the generation XYZs about today, go to the end of Acts chapter 17. And there we see that there is a spirit God who is creator of all that is. And he has sent his son Jesus, who was crucified and rose again. There's more there. We see that we have a sovereign, transcendent, omnipotent God. And as Paul presents these things in contrast to Greek philosophy, some reject the gospel, some accept the gospel. And now it doesn't say why he left Athens. This is a weird one. And Daryl in Sunday school a few weeks ago expressed his frustration with Dr. Luke in his historical record that we have in our Bible called the Book of Acts. Why did he leave Athens? It doesn't talk about a church being established there. It does talk about there's this Areopagite, he gets saved, and there's this a woman named Damaris. That's it. A woman named Damaris. Was she rich? Was she wicked? Was she intelligent? Was she... Don't know. A woman named Damaris. And so we know... No Jews there, so, to speak of, compared to the Greeks. So why? We don't know. But the next thing we know, Paul's heading off to Corinth in the first part of Acts chapter 18. And that's where we pick up the story today. And we're going to focus on some things that happened while he was there in Corinth. Paul will be in Corinth for 18 months. When he feels like it's time to leave Corinth, he has a desire to be back in Jerusalem. So he goes across the Aegean Sea, stops for just a minute in Ephesus. There, he gets a warm welcome from the Jews in the synagogue, and they beg him to stay and teach. Wow, this is different. First time this has happened. Paul promises them, I will come back. He takes off. He goes down to Jerusalem, and this is where we're getting into next week's Sunday school class. He stops at Caesarea, the seaport, down to Jerusalem, back to Antioch, and then he starts off on his third journey, which will take us back through Galatia and ends up at Ephesus for 3 years, and that's the next 2 weeks Sunday school lesson, so now you can skip church for 2 weeks. Okay, let's come off of that, and let's go to our lessons. What we're going to talk about today is some lessons that I think we can learn from the history that we find in Corinth. Corinth was a city that they had been a powerful city during the days when Athens was powerful, because it was there on the Achaia Peninsula, or the Achaia province, the Peloponnesus Peninsula, the city of Corinth. And it was in a very crucial place. You know, some places are just, the geography deems that they're going to be big, right? And, you know, some cities, if you were to destroy them today, they would be rebuilt. And this is the city of Corinth. It was sitting right there on an isthmus. I think that's the way you say that. I never could get my tongue to say, is it the S first or the T? Anyway, isthmus. And that if you wanted to go north and south from the main part of Greece, down to the Peloponnesian peninsula, you had to cross through this little isthmus where the city of Corinth was. And if you were traveling from Rome and you wanted to get over to Turkey, backwards for you guys, Rome to Turkey, it was much safer to come into the harbor there, or the Bay of Corinth, and get your boat off your boat, drag your stuff across this little isthmus, and then get sailing on, because the seas down at the bottom of this peninsula were very, very treacherous. And so a lot of people, rather than risk losing their cargo and their life going around the bottom peninsula, they would stop and they'd pull their... Actually, they had kind of a canal where they would literally drag small ships across that area, or they would unload and port on the other side. And ships were just like kind of our trucks today. You know, you'd run from one city to a station, and then you get it on another truck and run to another station, or drop the trailer and pick it up like our semis do in the United States today. Well, there were some ships that would run back and forth in the Aegean Sea, and some would run back and forth in the Adriatic Sea, and their goods would be transported across to the city of Corinth. Well, Corinth rebelled against Rome. Rome becomes powerful a couple hundred years B.C., and they're dominating the Grecian peninsula. And Corinth says, that's it, and they rebel at 146 B.C., Rome comes in, destroys the city of Corinth, and for 100 years it lies in rubble, but it's too prominent a place to leave that way. So 46 B.C., Julius Caesar comes along, rebuilds magnificently the city of Corinth. Now another 100 years later, about 56 A.D., when Paul gets to Corinth, Corinth is so different from Athens. In Athens, people behave in a manner because they are educated. In Athens, people act intelligently. It's about philosophy. It's about doing the right thing, the intelligent thing. In Corinth, give me the buck. Let me see the money. It's a business center. It's a thriving business center. Oh, yeah, they do have a religion. The goddess there is a goddess named Aphrodite. It's a goddess of love. And there's over 1,000 servants of her temple, prostitutes, that ply their trade to the businessmen that are coming and going in that city. So that the Greek word for prostitute was a word that came from this name of the city of Corinth. If you were a Corinthian, that probably didn't have to do with the fact that you were from the city of Corinth, but it probably meant in the Greek that you were a prostitute, because that's what they were. That's what the city was known for. And it's to this city that Paul comes. And he's different, I think. As you looked at verses 1 through 4 there of chapter 18, did Paul come into the city gangbusters? Did he go right to the synagogue? There are Jews there. And he finds this couple, Aquila and Priscilla. Now, they're an interesting couple. Her name is often mentioned first, Priscilla is. In this first introduction, he found a Jew named Aquila. And then Priscilla's name. And they're tent makers. And it says that Paul is. That was not unusual for Jewish boys. In fact, it was necessary that they had a trade. Paul was from an area where a lot of goat's hair was spun into a material there in the hills, a mountain area of Tarsus. Maybe he'd learned how to make some kind of a material, a canvas, or a felt tent. The Mongols today still use a felt that comes from their animals to create their tents. Perhaps Paul had learned how to make something like that as a young man, as his trade, even though he was also trained as a rabbi, it was required that he learn how to work with his hands. So maybe that's why he was a tent maker, coming from that hill country. He joins this couple, Aquila and Priscilla, who have been deported from Rome, so they're kind of transients too. And they go to he's in this wicked city. He meets this couple. Whether or not they're Christians, we're not sure. At this point anyway, maybe they're just tent makers and they happen to run into him. And it says he goes to the synagogue on Saturday and he reasons in the synagogue. And he stayed with them for a while. And how long are verses 1 through 4 of Acts 18? Don't know. Is it weeks? I think it's more than days. Maybe it's even a few months. But it's not... I don't sense the gangbusters. Paul doesn't go into town and then 2 weeks later there's a riot. Okay? That's what seems to be his norm. Go to town, talk to the Jews, they throw you out, preach a big sermon that everybody shows up at, and then there's a riot in town and you have to leave. That seems to be his modus operandi, is what happens at time. Doesn't happen this time. As a matter of fact, Paul seems to come into the town almost a little skittishly. I don't know if he's intimidated by the sin in the city. Come with me, if you would, to 1 Corinthians chapter 2. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, when he writes this church later on from the city of Ephesus, I believe. Paul writes this, 1 Corinthians chapter 2, 1 to 3. And brethren, when I came to you, did not come with excellence of speech or of wisdom declaring to you the testimony of God. For I determined not to know anything among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. I was with you in weakness, in fear, and in much trembling. Does this sound like Paul? I mean, whenever I read Paul in the Scripture, Barnabas is the guy who loves people. Paul is the guy who abuses people. He comes in and he just, gets saved or go to hell. I mean, he's the hellfire and brimstone guy. And if you try to argue with Paul, you will be made a fool because he's got all the answers. I'm just intimidated reading about Paul. He scares me, quite frankly. But he's afraid. What's going on here? And as I think about this and kind of chewed on this a little this week, here's my first lesson that I want us to get from this text, and that is this. Number one, life and ministry contain big days and low days. And you can put a lot of things in that, but know this, that there are days when God is so strong in your life, when you've got the time and energy to do much for Him. And then it seems like sometimes there's just, it doesn't go so well. And not as much is happening. And sometimes as a pastor of the church, I ask myself, we haven't maybe used the baptistry for a while, and there hasn't been maybe a new family for a while. And what's God doing here? Is God still working? Is He still with us? And I think we see in this incidents that Paul comes from a confrontational ministry that he has in Philippi and in Thessalonica and in Berea. He comes down to Athens. He engages the intelligent men in the intelligentsia of that city. He goes on to court. And yeah, he goes to church on Saturday, but you note what he does on Sunday through Friday. He's making tents. This is a little strange. That brings me to a second point from this text, I think, and that is this. All types of work are worthy. All types of work are worthy. Paul, the great apostle, He that is trained at the seat of Gamaliel, he that has received revelation from God himself, the one that Jesus led to saving faith, is making tents. He's making tents. I think we need to learn a lesson here. I had a friend when I was in Waupaca whose name was Rich. And Rich was a family man, a factory worker. And Rich and I were talking one day, and he says, "You know, I really want to be ordained." And I was a preacher's kid, and so the first word out of my mouth was, "Why? Why in the world would you want that to happen to you and to your family? Why? Because ordained to me, that means pastor, and just, you know, you want this? Hello? What's wrong with you?" And as I talked to Rich that day, he really felt that his life, and subsequently Rich is now pastoring a church in New London. But I sensed in him, I think, an error that sometimes we feel that, you know, there's life that doesn't mean anything, and then there's full-time ordained ministry. No. There's not a glass ceiling like that. It's not where you have to break through something to really minister. Work, going all the way back to the job that Adam and Eve were given in the garden, that Adam specifically was given to keep the garden, work is worthy. And there is not unworthy labor. In fact, there is good physical labor. Work is a good thing. It is a good thing to desire to minister. It is a good thing to desire to pastor. Paul told 1 Timothy, in 1 Timothy 3, Paul said that wanting to be the overseer in a church, the person who bears the responsibility in a church, wanting to have that job is a worthy work. But nonetheless, it's a work. And it's a good thing to work. Sometimes we get the term tent maker from this passage. Sometimes there are people who go to an area to minister and they have to work because there's no income from the ministry. Sometimes many countries today, our Bible colleges are really talking to kids about this. Northland, Maranatha, and others are talking a lot about this. Get your college degree in something like English or science. And then use your college degree or your nursing degree or your ability to be a doctor to get into a country in the 1040 window, Africa, Asia, where there are Muslims that won't let you in or communist governments that won't let you in, but you're an English teacher or you are a doctor and now they'll let you in, and you go in as a doctor or an English teacher and you can spread the gospel that way. And so that's what the term tent maker has become in our language today. And I don't think it's a wrong term, but I think we just come back to this text. Paul the apostle is a tent maker. And that was a good thing. And then chapter verse 5, when Silas and Timothy had come from Macedonia, Paul was compelled by the Spirit, it says in my New King James. The NIV says, Paul devoted himself exclusively to preaching. Something happens. Here are these two guys, Paul, Timothy and Silas, show up, and all of a sudden Paul goes from tent making Sunday through Friday, arguing or discussing the law in the synagogue on Saturday, to 7 days a week he's preaching. He's gone from the Paul that I had trouble identifying with to the Paul we knew before. What happened? What was different? Well, I think maybe he'd run out of money. I think maybe he had enough money that he didn't have to worry about what to eat when he was in Athens. And by the time he got to Corinth, quite frankly, he was broke. And I think he had to revert back to his old trade of 6 days a week tent making just to eat, just to take care of himself. And I think perhaps there's a lesson there for us too. And I think maybe when Timothy and Silas showed up, we know from the book of Philippians that Paul thanked them for a gift that they sent him once and again. I think maybe Timothy and Silas show up with cash. And now Paul doesn't need to tent make anymore, so he's able to devote himself full time to preaching the gospel 7 days a week. Maybe too, Timothy comes alongside him and, hey, Timothy says to Paul, Paul, I'll take care of your shirts. I'll make sure they're ironed. I'll go get the food. I'll make sure soup's on at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You go do your thing and I'll minister to you, because that's kind of what Timothy was brought along for. And so maybe with Timothy coming back to the fold, Paul is able to minister. It may be just the fact that Timothy and Silas show up, that it surrounds Paul with emotional support. When I think of a couple of our missionaries, I'll name them. David and Luann Austinson left Czechoslovakia. Why? Dick and Robin Zietschlag. Yes, there was health and there were other reasons, but part of the struggle, I think, for some of these missionaries is they're just lonely. They become overwhelmed by the oppression of their area and not having other Christians. The Austinsons confessed to Lynn and I when we were talking at a church dinner here. Luann said, when I came back after being 4 years in the Republic of Czech and came back to the United States, she said, I cried through every church service I sat in for 6 months. Just listening to God's people sing the hymns was so refreshing to her that it was a broken thing inside of her heart. Yeah, sometimes I wonder if we shouldn't make sure that our missionaries go out in sets of two or three couples. Here, Paul's kind of laying back. He's going to the synagogue, the Jewish place on Saturday, and he's reasoning with them there, talking about Jesus. Timothy and Silas show up, and all of a sudden, Paul's ready to go to A number one, Billy Graham, let's take on the whole city evangelism. What happened? I think part of it is his friends showed up. He had strength, and perhaps it was a combination of all these things. He had more time and more energy. Paul ratcheted up his ministry and went forward because he had the resources to do so. Well, it didn't take long for the Jews to not like him. And they end up throwing him out of the synagogue, and he goes to a place with right next door. God opens the home of a believer in a place where there's this guy named Titus Justus. And there an amazing thing happened. The ruler of the synagogue believes on Jesus. The guy who's in charge of the Jews, he accepts Jesus as his Savior. Well, many others, and I think there's a lesson we can learn here. If you are wealthy or perceived to be wealthy, if you are intelligent or perceived to be intelligent, if you are well-connected or perceived to be well-connected, there is a certain responsibility in spiritual matters. Here this man believed on Jesus who had been a ruler of the synagogue, and all of a sudden, there's many, it says, that believe on Jesus. Well, a revival breaks out. And you know, as the revival breaks out, now Paul, he's been doing this for a while. He's been stoned. He's been thrown out of the city. It's been rough. I think he gets to be afraid. I think a lot of people start getting saved, and I think Paul starts going, oh no, this town, all its wickedness is turning to righteousness. If they threw me out of other places because they lost their income, what are they going to do here? And notice Jesus comes to Paul. This is a great passage. Look at verses 9 and 10. Now the Lord spoke to Paul in the night by a vision. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Paul will write to the Corinthians later. I'm reading from 2 Corinthians 11 in NIV. 2 Corinthians 11, 24 to 28 says this. Paul writes, 5 times I received from the Jews 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I have been constantly on the move. I have been in danger from rivers, in dangers from bandits, in danger from my own countrymen, the Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, in danger from false brothers. I have labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst and have often gone without food. I have been cold and naked. Beside everything else, I face daily the pressure concerning all the churches. I think Jesus comes to Paul because when he comes to this point in his ministry where God is doing wonderful things there in the city of Corinth, I think the old apostle says, whoa, this is scary. And I don't know as I want to get beat again this weekend. I think I've had enough. And Jesus comes along and he says, Paul, don't be afraid. In this town, no one is going to touch you. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of believers in this city and that are going to come to the Lord, and you just need to preach fearlessly here, Paul. He does. He does. And the revival continues. Well, the Jews can't handle that very long. And so one day the Jews arrest Paul. Well, let me come down to my third point this morning. Paul invested ministry energy where it was effective. I think this is important. Sometimes we beat our heads out for the person that won't minister or won't respond to ministry. I admire those who work with alcoholics and prison ministry. I think those are important places to put resources. But you know where God has always burdened my heart? With the people who show up. with the people who want to change. When I took the Minister of Youth position at First Baptist Church in LaSalle, there was the chairman of the deacon board. And by the way, if you're looking at your clock, I didn't get on until 5:02, okay? So I've been only doing this for a little about 30 minutes, all right? Just so you know. All right. When I went to, when I first took the youth pastor's job at First Baptist LaSalle, there was a guy named Jack who was the chairman of the deacon board, and he came up to me about the time that I became the minister of youth, and he said, "We've really needed you. We just really need a youth pastor, and this is going to be a great thing for our teenagers." Well, I cranked up the youth ministry, and I preached my heart out at those kids, and we started having lots of youth activities. I drugged over poor Darren and Carla Dury all over the northern half of Illinois as they went along on different youth activities. And we had about 20, 30 kids coming to a lot of those youth activities. I'd been there almost a year when I realized why Jack Grant said that to me. He had a daughter in high school. Her name was Jackie. She never came to teen Sunday school. She never came to youth meetings. She never came to a youth activity. She did not come to the Christian school. I don't think I ever, in my 4 years of ministry at First Baptist LaSalle, ever had a conversation with that young lady. He wanted her to be reached. He wanted her carnal habits and her carnal ways to be broken. But she was never there. And I didn't even know she was a teenager. She was sophisticated enough looking that I thought she was a college-age kid. So I never went out of my way to reach her. That wasn't my job necessarily. Maybe a bad attitude. But I can tell you that we did minister to Keith and Sandy and Rich and Laura and Debbie and Gary and Vicky and Teresa and a lot of kids. You know, there are people in this auditorium who pay the pastors of this church to teach their kids Bible. I just thinking again about Jake Westra. He goes to school, and he has to listen to Pastor Rory 180 days a year in school. Then he's got to listen to Pastor Rory at least 50 times a year on Wednesday and 50 times a year in church. Do you realize that Jake Westra, during his teenage years, will sit under the influence of Pastor Rory or another pastor in this church over 270 days out of every year? That's three-quarters of Jacob Westra's teenage life. He will be forced to sit under the ministry of the pastoral staff at Trinity Baptist Church. I don't know who to feel sorry for, Jake or the pastoral staff, especially Pastor Rory. Who's going to have the greater influence? And I'm not saying, okay, you need to be in Wednesday night and Sunday school and Sunday morning and Christian school to be a Christian. Not saying that at all. But I am saying this. There is ministry opportunity that we miss out on. And I note in Paul, when the Jews reject him, he doesn't harass them more. He says, no. In fact, he shakes out his clothes and says, I'm going to the Gentiles. I'm going someplace else where I can have an effective ministry. Paul ministered where people were willing to listen. And I think we need to understand that should be our philosophy. You tell the gospel to someone and they spit in your face, tell the gospel to someone else. Paul went to the big cities because that's where the people were. He went to the synagogues because that's where the believers in God were. And when they rejected him, he went to the Gentiles who were listening. Paul invested ministry energy where it was effective. All right, one more point. It has nothing to do with all the rest of them, which none of the points had anything to do with all the rest of the points today anyway. It's kind of a shotgun sermon. Finally, government can provide rest for the spread of the gospel. 1 Timothy 2, Paul tells us to pray for those who are in authority. Some Christians seem to think government is a wicked thing. The truth of the matter is, I believe government can provide rest so that the gospel goes forward, and we should consider that. A wicked government is better than no government. Look at the book of Judges, where there was no government, and every man did that which is right in his own eyes. That was anarchy. A wicked government is better than no government. Well, in this story here, there's this guy, Sosthenes. He's down at the end. The Greeks took Sosthenes after he drugged Paul off to jail, and Gallio refuted Sosthenes, the leader of the synagogue. And the Greeks then, all the educated people, I don't think this is a racial thing, I think it's educated people, the Greeks were. And they took Sosthenes and they beat him right there in the courtroom. And the Roman judge, he just kind of ignored him. This guy named Sosthenes. How different the guy named Crispus, that we have there in verse 8. He's the ruler of the synagogue. He believes. And then there's this guy, Sosthenes. He's the leader of the synagogue, and he does not believe. In fact, he drags Paul off to jail. Randy said I was going to talk about grace this morning, so I will. The one responded to the grace of God. Crispus did. The other did not. One accepted the gospel. The other did not. Or did he? Look with me again at 1 Corinthians chapter 1 this time. Turn in your Bibles just a couple books back. I'm done. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 says this. Paul, called to be an apostle of Jesus Christ through the will of God, and Sosthenes, our brother. Maybe that beating was effective. Maybe that beating by the Romans or the Greek-minded people in that Roman court made Sosthenes say, you know what, I need to rethink something here. And maybe he did accept. I don't know if it's the same person or not. There's no direct line drawn, just the circumstantial that we got this guy Sosthenes from Corinth that Paul knows. All right, I can almost see Paul going up to this guy after he gets beaten, says, hey man, I'm sorry, you know, can I buy you lunch? And maybe Sosthenes receives Christ, ends up going to minister with Paul, and then they write back to Corinth, and he says, you know, Sosthenes, my brother, is with me here. Grace, what's the difference? It's grace. What are you doing with the grace of God?